Okay, so guaranteed, we've spent a lot of time today talking about content, very little time talking about advertising and monetization, and I'm looking forward to this. I think, you know, my panel's got some interesting insights into what's going on and where things are in the industry. But first, you know, Mark, why don't you talk a little bit about your role and your team's role at Fox?
Sure. Hi, everybody. My name is Mark London. I work at Fox Networks Group here in LA. The advanced advertising group that I'm part of, we support our linear and nonlinear sales teams across all Fox Networks properties except Fox News. So that is an exception. Their team is in New York. I'm based here in LA. So we put ads into all of our on-demand programming on the set-top box via our partnership with Canoe, on all connected devices, iPhones, iPads, Android devices, you name it. So wherever Fox content lives, we are trying to put ads. We're also, as far as the advanced part, which may be interesting to you all, is for content such as FX, we're trying to put less ads in to garner more attention, which seems to be a big theme here with this group, and make the same or if not more money. So we,
And we're going to talk about that, you know, that reduction in ad load in dynamic and addressable advertising in a few minutes. So great. So Chris, talk a little bit about Canoe and your role with Canoe and who you work with and what your role is in the supply chain.
Yeah. So hello, everyone. Chris Bizzaro, Canoe. As Mark mentioned, I think it's just a perfect example of what we do. The end result is if you're watching FX and you play baskets on here in L.A., if Spectrum is your cable operator, and you go to your on-demand menu, you play that program. When that ad plays, that's coming through the Canoe platform. We maintain 36 million homes across Charter, Cox, and Comcast, and our job is to make your content, your networks, run smoothly between the entertainment content and the ad, so that it's a smooth experience for the consumer.
Got it. So we're all, you know, we're all sort of familiar with the evolving world of advertising, and we've got the linear models, the on-demand models. Mark, talk a little bit about, firstly, talk about what is addressable advertising and dynamic ad insertion, sort of from a technical standpoint, and then we'll get into some of the benefits and opportunities that presents.
Well, I mean, sorry. We dynamically ad insert into our ad breaks of our content, which DAI stands for. The addressable is the industry effort to provide a more improved targeting efforts for our linear advertisers to find those audiences on nonlinear platforms, which include the set-top box. So, but again, saying it's complicated would be the understatement of the year as it pertains to working with our MVPD partners. But for the most part, with addressable and DAI, we are trying to match the linear buying experience with our nonlinear offerings.
And when you're doing some of that ad decisioning, you know, using some pretty significant third-party data, probably using other vendors in the supply chain, how does that all sort of come together?
Well, again, I would say the value proposition that our salespeople are providing to the buyers is obviously tremendous content, especially with, you know, live sports, FX, Fox, our shows, as well as a very intense and complex tech stack with our data partners, obviously with Nielsen and Comscore for tracking and currency with our partners at the MVPD. So it's a the chop without boring everyone on the technical stack or with the technical stack. It is a very intense behind the scenes machinery, but for the most part, again, we're vying for attention, and any way to get that with any of the existing partners in the marketplace, we're going down that road.
And Chris, what role does standardization play in this whole dynamic ad insertion world?
Extremely important in terms of if you're trying to, in the consumer's mind, to have a consistent experience, right? If you look back at just linear TV, TV in the consumer's mind is there's a consistency there. I know I'm going to pick up my remote. I know I'm going to click the button, and a stream is going to start playing. There's going to be commercials, right? A consumer doesn't say it, but there's an expectation of quality and smoothness in the linear TV experience. That is, that's what TV is, if you really think about it. So as we move into this world of multi-platforms and different ad loads and a whole bunch of things that are all over the place, in order to keep that consistency of television in the consumer's mind, we need standards. We need things like Ad ID. We need things like EITR. We need things to tie all those disparate platforms together. So in the consumer's experience, they are still watching TV. It's just now different platforms, different forms of TV, but the quality remains, and standards are an important part of making that happen.
Got it. So audience question here. How many people here have read about an initiative called OpenAP? Got a few hands. So, Mark, I want to talk a little bit about OpenAP. You know, for a preface, I see OpenAP as one of these collaborative initiatives that has shown a lot of, I would say, a lot of great thought leadership on behalf of Fox, Viacom, and Turner. But, Mark, talk a little bit about OpenAP, and then let's talk about that for a bit as well.
Sure. So at the highest level, it is a collaboration between a few publishers and with a third-party trusted source in Accenture to provide the buy side the ability to create segments that has data that they can use across publishers so they can have a more efficient buy. Having our partnership with Accenture allows us to not, it's not our numbers. It's the ability for a trusted third party to provide those numbers to give the buyers the security, not just on the currency, but also the security on the fact that it is the right data set. It does provide them a linear-like buy-in execution, and it does provide them something on more scale than if they went to each individual publisher, which is cumbersome, which feedback we've heard from our media buyer partners. So this does provide them a scale, some security, as well as the fact that it is new, and our sales leadership, Joe Marchese specifically, is really pushing the envelope on 6-second ads, OpenAP, you know, less ads, different types of ad units. So we feel we're at the cutting edge, but we're also not going in alone. We're looking to partner with all of our friends in the industry,
which is unlike the advertising industry in general. You know, that tends to be. You know, again, we've heard throughout the day the conversation about silos. You know, everybody tends to work in their silos, and everybody tends to work within their organization. I can do things better than others. What drove those three companies to do that together rather than, you know, there's certainly a cost benefit to Fox and, you know, to do it on their own.
Well, again, I think all of us in this room are part of the cutting edge or the tip of the spear for innovation. I mean, all of us need to innovate to thrive and survive. And the fact of the matter is we represent our storytellers, and we put that on television, and we need to make the business model work. And to do that, you do need to innovate. We can't just keep jamming 30-second ads a lot of people want to, but there's time to innovate. And also with the competition, all the companies that we referred to earlier, it's innovation, and sometimes it's a necessity. These things need to happen.
Yeah, and it's a point in history and time for TV where, like Mark said, it was the solution to paying for all your programming for a number of years was just, we'll just put more spots in linear. Right? We'll just keep putting more spots and keep charging them more. And it's you all being in the room seen it up here on the screen, from more electronic sell-through, more direct-to-consumer, right? That's putting pressure on to us in advertising to innovate, to figure out ways to still have the advertising business make money, because we fully know and expect that probably 30% of advertising will actually go away in a few years. So because of your electronic sell-through, of your direct-to-consumer, all those sorts of things. There's a famous saying by David Ogilvy of 50% of my advertising is being wasted. I just don't know what 50%, right?
That's a Wanamaker.
Right, it's often misquoted. The whole thing behind that now, though, is that 50% that you don't know about, it's now gone. That 50% isn't even there anymore. So the 50% that's left forces us to innovate in interesting ways.
Well, and this goes to what I've sort of held back on from Mark. You sort of went there at the very beginning, but we sort of led into this. Reducing ad load is a wonderful objective, but increased ad load is kind of like crack cocaine. Nobody is walking away from linear television. You know, like the shares of linear television are certainly different than they were, but talk to me about the reduced ad load. How do you get to a reduced ad load, and what does it mean for the consumer, for Fox?
Well, I would say the measurement is showing that people are watching less, but some of our nonlinear numbers are showing that there's more people watching. Mm-hmm. So there's definitely a measurement challenge in the ad industry. Also, if you look at it, all of us, we're in a competing world for our attention versus ad-free and ad-supported. If you're watching Netflix or you're watching one of the network apps, you're not, oh, I'm ad-free, oh, now I'm ad-supported. You don't think that way, but I think that way, and my mm-hmm. bosses think that way. And so for us, how to execute on reduced ad loads is we want the attention of our consumers, but they also want to see these shows. I mean, it's, between live sports, our cable, our broadcast, we have compelling content, as well as the fact that we also have, there's natural ad breaks in these stories. What's the best ad product to place there? Those are conversations that we have all day, every day, and we're continuing to innovate, and some could call that testing, but every day is a test for us. So, how do we get there? It's a lot of arm twisting. Takes a lot of patience, but it also takes a collaborative effort with everybody in the supply chain. When I say supply chain, meaning here's the content that we need to stream across all of our apps, and we need to monetize it, whether that's through our distribution deals for EST or for our ad-supported apps and sites.
And Chris, you and I were talking earlier today about some of the content silos, and it's interesting to me. We all think a lot about watching content on demand using over-the-top devices, whether it's an Apple TV, Roku, but the reality is that cable video on demand continues to grow. Talk a little bit about the trends in growth, what you're seeing in the growth in that area, and what's driving that growth versus continued growth of over the top?
We've been, for our business, again, that ad supported of running Fox, Disney, NBC, basically everyone comes to our platform and those MSOs. We've had a 30% growth rate in this business for the last 18 quarters. Knocked on wood, it's amazing. And certainly OTT, everything we've been talking about, is certainly growing, direct-to-consumer certainly growing, and yet we still have this 30% growth rate in the ad-supported VOD cable business. We fully expect that to continue to grow, but it's going to grow in different ways. Mm-hmm. So how it's currently doing is, when we first started it, everything was on the set-top box. But now, for instance, if I use that Spectrum example, if you're here in LA, you have your set-top box to watch it, but you could also download the Spectrum app onto your mobile phone. So we are now in the OTT, we are now in the mobile business, even though we're not in the mobile business. Mm-hmm. You can download that Spectrum app onto your Roku. So we're following our MSO's VOD service as it migrates off the set-top box into these other applications. And what's key about that, we do a lot of work with Fox on this, and certainly as people showed earlier in terms of the tools that are available for the web, we use those same sort of tools in mining all the set-top box data and watching that migration of set-top box to mobile, to over-the-top, and it's just fascinating with the amount of data that's out there. So we expect the business to continue to grow, but now it's growing in different ways.
So I've got other questions to ask, but I want to make sure that we're covering the audience's questions, because we certainly haven't talked about advertising. We've got a question over there. So Guy, you what, running around with a microphone here somewhere, or Garrett?
Where's the hand? There it is.
Over there.
Hey, here we go.
It's always on the other side of the room, it always seems like.
We need running music.
So this is for Chris.
State your name and where you're from.
Yael Miller. I'm from the Walt Disney Company, the DCPI division. My question is for Chris, and you were talking about the smoothness of the TV experience and the more non-linear experience. So my concern, my problem with the comment is that, or how would you solve this problem, that the fact is that those are technology-based solutions that are non-linear that are dependent on tech support in terms of page load performance. So like the ad takes an extra 3 seconds to load while after the act break, or it stutters, or the ad loads is a worse experience than the video, or there are big brands that I won't name that I think are just terrible website video experience. So how can you ensure there's a smoothness in that experience if it's dependent on so many forces?
Yeah, great question. And Mark can certainly chime in.
Yes, Chris, like we said, I have the same problem.
Yes, exactly. A few different ways. First is to reduce latency is always that, right? How do you reduce latency in all those systems? So one way to do it is kind of back to standards, that if your metadata has to be correct, your endpoints, your breakpoints, everything needs to be done correctly as per the spec, because every millisecond that the system needs to think or interpret something that's not the way it should be, that's what starts to cause latency. And that adds up to, 1 second. That's a delay for the consumer. So a lot of that's actually in your control, and we work a lot with Fox on this, a lot with within our cable plants, frankly, a lot with the Disney folks too, how to reduce that latency. And you do that through making sure all your metadata is correct. The less the system technically has to think, the better result for the consumer. So that's one way. But there's a whole bunch of tricks. We work a lot. Also go back to now is you merge your digital systems with your linear systems. Again, we're used to TV and TV, traditional TV guys of you have to have everything down to the millisecond. And working with the digital guys, and we do a lot of digital integration, it was amazing in the early days. A lot of the digital systems are like, so what if it's a 10% latency? Whatever, who cares? The page will eventually load. So some of it's actually attitude. It's kind of a part of it's just getting cultures to work in a more TV-like attitude, because the digital guys sort of have this throw spaghetti at the wall digital attitude. And so we've done a lot of work with a company called Freewheel. It's a Comcast company that we've done an integration with actually Disney and with Fox on. Google DFP, Dart for Publishers, a traditional system, done a lot of work there on making those integrations work and talk to each other the way they should. So there's a lot of things you can do. I don't know, Mark, if you...
No.
Well, and I wanted to, Yael, great question, and lots of things to unpack in there, but one of the important ones goes back to what we talked about earlier in the day during Metadata Madness, and that is mezzanine file formats. You know, because at the end of the day, when you start thinking about standard mezzanine files for ads, you start to realize that you can get involved in transcoding, variable bitrate streaming, but if you give a high quality mezzanine at the time that an ad arrives at a point of either the ad server or the ad decisioning system, then all of a sudden you have the ability to transcode that ad to on the fly to a variable bitrate that is acceptable to the consumer. If you start with a low quality ad, and in a lot of cases, you know, we're not clear. You know, we're not clear as far as standards as to what kind of an ad somebody will receive. You know, I've seen lots of cases where a low res QuickTime file gets sent and it gets transcoded to variable bit rates that all of a sudden the consumer experience becomes much reduced, far reduced, because you don't have that quality there. So I think that it behooves the supply chain, it behooves the publishers and the vendors to start talking about standards. The advertising ecosystem is not much different. What I keep learning by coming to these events is the advertising ecosystem is not much different than the programming ecosystem and the electronic sell-through ecosystem. It's very easy to say to customers, don't worry, I got you covered. Give me what you got. But we're getting to a point where give me what you've got and I've got you covered don't work anymore. You know, to Mark's point, if we're going to reduce ad load, we want to have an improved consumer experience as well. You know, give them the highest quality ad on the platform they want it on. And it begins to really become that much more of an important conversation. Other questions from the audience?
I shouldn't have come back.
Back there?
Stay in the corner.
Hang on, got a microphone coming to you. And don't forget to tell us who you are, where you're from.
Hi, David from Perilous Orbit. We have VR games, and I just wanted to find out if you had any thoughts on advertising for our what impact that'll have, what ad formats might work, what kind of advertisers, that kind of thing.
I mean, the options are limitless in that regard, and I also think a lot of the storytellers and the studios are experimenting with, I want to call it a mix of product placement and slick technology execution. I mean, to me, it's limitless, and I love that space. It's just the traditional 30-second spot, of which is the thing I deal with all day, that really doesn't fit into that model per se. But again, I love it. And I think from a technical standpoint, I would say you see innovation across, especially even on TV with, I don't know if anyone's sports fans in here, but the last night in the hockey game, someone made a mistake on air, and the ad that's normally behind the glass behind the goalie's net, that came all the way into center ice, which to me, and if you're in a VR experience, I think live action, there are ways to have those kind of overlays. As far as the technology on some of the existing platforms, I wouldn't be able to give you any specifics.
So I'm going to ask you a question in a second, but Mark, how do you get advertisers and their agencies jazzed about VR? You know, and how do you get, you know, do you demonstrate that? Do you, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's, I think all of our publishing or our, you know, studio partners all have labs. You know, they have the storytellers themselves come in and, you know, they have ideas. I mean, it's a awesome experience. Integrating a product message in there is tricky, but the options are limitless. I mean, how do you convince anybody of anything? You show them shiny new things and, you know.
Yeah. I'm going to turn back to you, the gentleman that asked the question. What do you think are some great ideas for VR in advertising? You know, and have you done something or have you seen something that you really think is a great idea?
I'm just figuring it out. So I don't know. I think it depends a lot on the game design. So it's going to be a lot of variability based on the game design. So I think some things will actually translate. Like, for example, if you have, you know, if you have screens in the game, then you can probably some, like, maybe not 30-second spot, but you can have some sort of advertising billboards and things like that in the game. But I think the future is probably going to be, like, product placement and things like that. So
It's a great, great thing to start thinking about. Okay, we got time for one more question, and I wanted to ask Mark another question. Any other questions? So, Mark, a couple of panels this afternoon have talked about artificial intelligence. Anything that you're seeing on the horizon? Anything that you think is really interesting?
I don't know. To me, it's for my world, when I'm literally stuck in the boiler room trying to shove more coal into these engines. I mean, to me, AI is somewhat of a oxymoron, but anyways, I would say from an ad perspective, it is part of the future, no doubt. But the fact of the matter is, if you get into a world where, and this is where I think VR is amazing, you're almost creating your own experience. I mean, you are. I mean, really. So the fact that you can say, well, I don't want any messaging in here. I don't want a story outside of the, say, you're in a VR game or you have AI, and then it'll automatically kind of envision what you want and display that in some kind of video format. I don't know where ads fit in, other than if it's baked into the actual to the experience beforehand. So, but for us, there's other people in our groups that are working on that. But I those kinds of things are. This is what I love coming to these types of events. This is where you can discuss those things kind of freeform, and then go back to your lab and experiment. But right now, like on my day-to-day, I don't get a chance to do that.
All right, so 30 seconds each. Yep. 5 years from now, what does the ad-supported ecosystem look like?
5 years from now, what is that? Well, it depends, to be honest, is do we even have ads? You know, if everything's ad-free. I mean, I remember the good old days with the newsstand, you could just go grab any magazine you want for free, which never happened. I mean, to me, if the business models say we will have ads, then we're going to have them. But the fact of the matter is, if 100 million people are watching the Super Bowl and want to sell paper towels and cars, they're going to figure out a way. So I'll have a job.
Yeah. Chris? Yeah.
I do think we have ads in 5 years. Yeah. I do think I'll go back to something in John Canning's presentation that he put out, that he said a voice remote for Comcast Infinity. In those Comcast Xfinity X1 homes that have the voice remote, there is 30% increase to VOD views in those homes over non-X1 Comcast homes. Same content, just accessed via the, basically because of the voice remote. So just a matter of how you're interacting with that same content via the screen can have that much of an impact. I think that's the kind of technology and influence we'll see over the next 5 years, is in that interfacing and that back and forth with the content.
Excellent. Thanks, guys.
Harold, thank you so much. Mark, super appreciate it. Chris, thank you for coming in from New York. Fantastic.